KC, good morning. How you doing?
What's going on, guys? How you doing?
Oh, we're living the dream. It was kind of exactly what you told us was going to happen. They got a guy who runs the floor, who plays their style, who can help with a finish on offense and certainly can defend all over the place. A young teenage Frenchman drafted by the Chicago Bulls. What was your initial thought when it unfolded?
Not a surprise. We actually first talked about his name the night of the lottery. So, I mean, he's been linked to the Bulls for a while. We've been talking about him on our station for a while and on our podcast for a while. Definitely a bet on upside. It's pretty well known now. He's the second youngest player in the draft behind Cooper Flagg. Cooper Flagg is, if he's healthy, a lock. He's the real deal. No Essengue is got some boom potential, and you don't want to say with an 18-year-old because it's pretty young and the developmental project, but he's got some bust potential. I mean, you don't know where this kid's going to go. You'd like to think, given the trajectory Modest Muzelis is on, the Bulls are going to get two in a row right here. But, you know, there's a lot of unknowns with him, but certainly a lot of upside and certainly fits with the way they're playing stylistically.
How is this similar and how is it different from the types of things we were saying a year ago at this time after the Bulls drafted Matas Buzelis?
I think, well, the similar thing is they both played professional basketball, right? With Matas on playing for the G League Ignite until that disbanded. And, you know, this kid telling us in his Zoom call last night just how much playing professionally the last few years in Germany has helped him not only on the court, but off the court. What's different, you know, this is a guy that it doesn't have a lot of American experience. And Mark Eversley talked about last night not only the process the Bulls are going to have assimilating him on the court, but also off the court. I mean, Modest Buzelis was from here, had a strong family support system. I don't know Noah Essengue's living arrangement for next season. I don't know if people from his family are going to be coming over here to support him. But there's going to be a development process not only basketball-wise, but life-wise. I mean, this kid is very young, and he's, you know, obviously been away from home before, playing professionally in Germany and growing up in France. But this is going to be a whole new experience for him. So there's going to be a lot thrown at him. I personally have probably lower expectations for what he's going to do on his court his rookie season than Modest Muzelis, but maybe he'll prove me wrong. That's not to say he can't be a great player. It's just there's quite a bit of difference in terms of, you know, just how much is going to be on his plate coming over from overseas.
I do not know the quality of play in the German Basketball League. KC, so he started playing professionally as a 16-year-old there. Does that mean, I don't know what it means. I mean, just looking at it on video from YouTube, it just doesn't seem, I what's it equate to? Is there a college conference? Is it more like a level below the G League? I couldn't even figure out how competent the opposition was.
Yeah, I mean, I can't claim to be an expert on that league either. I mean, a lot of my knowledge comes from talking to Chris Fleming, the former Bulls assistant who coached in that league and has a lot of roots in international basketball in Germany. So, you know, I'm not going to sit here and pretend I'm an expert on that league. What I will tell you is that I had not only heard Noah Essengue in my conversations with some people, you know, associated with the Bulls, but also associated with other teams. I mean, this is not it's not like the Bulls are reaching, picking him at 12. He was mocked everywhere from 8 to 14, maybe. So, I mean, this is a guy that just really fits with the trends of today's NBA with his ability to run the court in transition, his length, his defensive versatility. So, I mean, it's not like, you know, whereas that league may not be as known as some of the other international leagues, it's not like he's a complete surprise coming at 12. So let's see what happens when he gets over here for summer league practice. Mm-hmm. And that's just the first step for sure.
Have to ask this because people have wondered, and I did myself last night, when you hear that he left his German league team in the championship final to be in the green room on the night he was drafted, How did he explain that decision? And was it in full? Did he have the full support of his coaches and family back involved in the German league?
Yeah, your guy Cody Westerlund asked him that on the Zoom. Good question. I actually did not know that detail until last night, and he, you know, addressed it head on. He said he talked about it with his coaching staff. They gave him his full support. He said it was a tough decision. But they told him to go live his dream. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, obviously. And he talked about getting to New York with his family and enjoying the experience and meeting his, you know, the rest of his rookie draft class. Actually had an experience with fellow countryman Joakim Noah, you know, once he was in New York. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure that has to be a hard decision. It's not like we went in-depth on it. But, you know, being drafted in the NBA is also a once-in-a-lifetime experience and being in New York. So, you know, something we can certainly follow up on once he gets over here.
I'm just curious, the basketball Bundesliga, does that, you know, he's more finisher than scorer. Can he shoot? Will he learn how to shoot? I'm just curious about the skill set and how right. that translates.
Okay, so I not only talked to people with the Bulls, but I talked to two scouts after the pick just to get their thoughts, one that had seen him play that's based here and one with a little more international flavor. They definitely say, right, what I was told is that he's definitely more advanced defensively than offensively right now, which, you know, probably isn't the worst thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then as far as the shooting, what I was told is that, you know, the percentage is not going to be great, but the form is solid. So if you've got a base of that to work with and you're 18 and a half and you put the work in, you've got some potential to grow there. He did talk to us on the Zoom about his finishing ability. He actually cited that as probably his most advanced offensive trait as of right now. Mark Eversley also pointed to that, his ability to get downhill, his ability to get to the line. Look, the guy's long. He's got a lot of length. You know, I'm not going to sit here and claim that I'm an expert on his offensive game because I'm, you know, basing this on conversations with people and the same YouTube videos you guys are watching. But yeah, I mean, there's certainly the potential there. I had one person tell me, and this, look, everything on draft night is, you know, pie in the sky optimism. And I'm not a big comp guy, but I asked one of the international guys I talked to, high-end comp, and he said Pascal Siakam. And let's tap the brakes on that because I'm just telling you high-end comp, but that's what I was told. So let's see where it goes from here.
Casey, we're talking to Mark Eversley at 9 o'clock and looking forward to that conversation. And you heard him last night begin the press conference, or near the beginning, address Billy Donovan's future and why they believe he is the right coach at the right time. We know that. And certainly there's been reporting that suggests that they, Mark Eversley and Arturis Karnišovas, are going to be here now for an extended period of time. Does this move reflect all of that? And if they weren't so secure in their jobs, would they have made the same choice, do you believe?
That's a great second question, really speculative, so I don't have a great answer. What I would say is two things to that. They've talked about patience from the jump, like shortly after the season ended, so I do think security probably played a small part of that. That said, and I want to emphasize this pretty strongly, they inherited a young roster filled with developmental projects from John and Gar in 2020. We expected them to continue that process given AK's history with Denver and how that franchise was built. They drafted and they held on to their guys and they had a lot of continuity and they had a lot of patience. They blew that up very unexpectedly in 2021. This is old news, well documented. They made big swings and big splashes. They got out of that game, and regardless of a contract situation, this to me is going to be a process. They've made that clear. Picking Modest is one step to that. Certainly that doubles down with an addition of an 18-year-old. So they are playing, from my estimation, the long game here. You know, you heard Mark Eversley talk many times last night about not wanting to skip steps and staying diligent. I'm sure he'll say similar things to you guys at 9. So that's my read on the situation. I mean, yeah, sure, the fact they have some security will help, but my strong sense, it's not even a gut sense, it's just my strong indications are they would have been taking this process regardless.
I'm curious what's left for them. I mean, they got a second round pick tonight. It's the 45th pick. Do they go with one of those draft and stash kind of players? Do they try to? Is there a position they're looking for in the second round? And maybe moreover, how many trades are out there? Did they talk then? Did you think something was going to happen? Were you surprised nothing did?
So multiple things on that. Yeah. I mean, Mark Eversley talked openly about, you know, conversations of moving both up and moving down. That's very typical for all teams. I will tell you that I have some intel on their draft board. I mean, they did like Colin Murray Boyles, another name. Not that shouldn't be a surprise because we've been talking about him and writing about him for weeks. But, you know, when they he went 9 to Toronto. So I'm guessing if they had conversations move up, he was one of the targets. But when they started to see the draft board playing out and realizing Essanguet was going to be there at 12, that probably was added some comfort level or at that and or the price was too high to move up. I'd expect a quiet night tonight. You just do the math. If they re-sign Josh Giddey, Javon Carter's already picked up his player option. No Essanguet signing a guaranteed deal. You're at 14 guaranteed contracts. Right. So I would expect them to try to trade out tonight, which Mark Eversley admitted is a possibility, and or a draft and stash. So I'd expect a quiet night. And then as far as the future, I mean, I fully expect them to use the mid-level exception in free agency to add a 15th player. Obviously, you can go up to 20 contracts in the offseason, but ultimately you got to get down to 15 guaranteed for the regular season. So they'll be active in trade talks. You know, the names have been out there. Patrick Williams, Nikola Vucevic, Lonzo Ball. Can't predict where that's going to go as of now, but I'm not going to be surprised if Noah Essanguet and solid veteran with a mid-level exception are the offseason moves for the Bulls.
How surprised are you by that? Not necessarily just the Bulls, but it was a pretty quiet draft night after we had gone into it thinking, maybe you didn't, but I think there was a suggestion that it was going to be some activity around the league, and there just wasn't.
Well, I mean, you certainly had some big trades leading up to the draft. Yeah. I think more trades are coming. I said before, I think in this new CBA, the trade market is almost like the new free agency in some ways. So, and look, the Bulls are certainly going to be active. I mean, it takes two, sometimes three teams to make a deal work. So I'm not saying that's for sure they're going to be the off-season path, but I'm not going to be surprised if that's what it is. No Essanguet and a veteran with the mid-level. So a lot of time left for the offseason. There'll be a lot of rumors, et cetera, and we'll see where it goes.
When will you know if this kid can play? I mean, it's going to take a couple of years, I would imagine, given his age, given the lack of experience. But I think that, you know, if he can run the floor and he can help them as a rookie, I think we'll see it. But we're also talking about trying to figure out a way to know if there's development going on.
Yeah, and I mean, you watch the way Billy Donovan brought Modest Gazelis along last season, right? And Modest himself talked about how that was tough for him at first, but he ultimately grew to really appreciate and respect that, and it helped him. And the way he closed the season should have Bulls fans obviously encouraged. This guy to me seems probably even more of a project than Modest. Maybe I'm wrong. So I don't, like I said before, I have pretty low expectations for rookie season, but maybe he'll prove me wrong. I just think there's so much on his plate as a 18 and a half year old. I mean, we all have kids. I mean, it's like, this guy's younger than my oldest kid. And it's like, you can't even believe this guy, you can't picture your own kid doing something like that. It's a big deal coming overseas and living in another country and learning a new culture and also trying to play professional basketball. They get paid handsomely for it. In fact, I joked with my oldest who just left for his summer internship and just finished his freshman year at Georgetown. I said, hey, Thomas Sober's making $4.6 million next year. What are you doing?
Wow. Thanks, Dad.
I mean, there's a lot for these kids, you know? So, but I don't want to minimize it. They get paid a handsome wage. The life they chose, but my expectations are pretty low, just given all that's going to be on this kid's plate next year.
Well, when you weren't razzing your son and you were evaluating the rest of the first round, what stood out to you in terms of a surprise? Did any team do better than you expected? And was there any move that raised your eyebrows?
That I don't have all the details on it because so much was coming across my radar last night, but I believe New Orleans traded an unprotected first round pick.
Yes.
Next season. That surprised
Crazy.
Me for sure. That absolutely surprised me. I think Yegor Demin going up to 8. I know he was a riser. I don't think I had anybody telling me he was going to go 8, and I think that certainly helped the Bulls. That was the pick where once that happened, I tweeted that this is reminding me of the Matas Buzelis draft, because if that guy goes 8, now you're within 9, 10, 4 picks of the Bulls, and there are a lot of names left that I knew that the Bulls still liked. Murray Boyles went next, so that one went off their board. But those were probably two of the biggest ones that jump out to me.
Back to Essanguy for a minute. You know, he obviously didn't have much of high school if he's playing professionally at 16, but his English was excellent. I'm sure he can speak French. Can he speak German too? Because he played in German. How many languages does this guy have? And we know from having different players come from different countries in Europe that oftentimes they're they're polyglot, I guess is what you say.
Yeah, and also, I mean, isn't that kind of the world approach to language other than in America? I mean, it's like most foreign people that I know, that's kind of just their culture. They're brought up learning different languages. So I don't know if he speaks German. His English was pretty good, definitely heavy accent, better than my French for sure. So, that's just part of it. I do think the German experience, I mean, that really stands out to me, and him bringing it up and, you know, how it helped him not only on the court but off the court. I mean, again, that's like a big life experience that helps you grow up, not only with the level of competition that you're facing, but then just adjusting to a new culture and all the different things you got to juggle as a professional at that young of an age. So I'm curious to talk to him more about that once he gets over here. And lot to learn about this guy, and excited to see where it goes.
Nice job, KC. Thanks for all the help.
Great stuff, KC.
All right, guys, have a great show. Enjoy talking to Mark. See you, man.
That is KC Johnson.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
I see him as a two-way player who can impact the game both offensively and defensively. His ability to get to the free throw line and play downhill is super intriguing to us. I think he'll be able to be a versatile wing defender. I think his game is a little bit similar to Matas in that, you know, he can face up, he can post you up, he can get out on the break. His game's just very versatile.
Come on! That was Mark Eversley after last night's first round of the NBA draft talking about Noah Essanguy. That is the player that they picked at 12th overall. Thanks to everybody on the text line, by the way, for telling me how to say Radiofarm Ulm. Turns out it's not Ratio Farm.
I knew it wasn't Ratio Farm. What I did know, it was not Ratio Farm.
I mean, guys, that's how you learn. You got to ask some questions.
But also, Layla,
sometimes you're afraid to ask them.
Listen, I know we're going to continue this conversation about the Bulls and where they're going with this after making Noah Essanguy the 12th overall pick in last night's draft. They have another pick tonight as it's first round, first day, second round, second day. But can I just
There's going to be no Taco Bell commercial when Nikola Jokic gets drafted this time.
Fair. The texts that are coming in and this idea that this team is going to be in playoff contention, and that's fine. My point is, trade away guys and you could still be in quote-unquote playoff contention. And what you really mean by playoff contention is you might get to the postseason. Top 10.
The postseason.
Top 10 teams get into the postseason from each conference. 2/3 of the NBA gets to the postseason every year.
Yeah, it's like high school football now.
Depending on what state you're playing in. Yes.
Where 2/3 of the teams get in.
Let me just, a couple of texts that I want to read. 239.
312-644-6767 if you want to text us. And some of you are out of pocket.
239 on the text line. That being said, the East is wide open, several eyes in the wide. With Vooch, Bulls could be up to a 4 seed.
Oh, no!
What?
No.
Did you watch any of the basketball over the last 2 months? Any of it? Any. Especially, say, the first round of the actual playoffs?
I don't think
the Bulls front office would say that.
That's a bad take.
And then 773, morning, do either of you believe the Bulls will trade Vooch? They always, that's in all caps, overvalue their players. They're probably asking too much for him and no trade will be made. That's from Ming.
Ming, I think that that's part of the issue. I think that based on past action, we know that they don't want to trade players that they value. We know that even based on simple Andre Drummond deals where they could have gotten second round picks for him and they decided to keep him until the end of the season.
I want to know if the Bulls believe that the team that they finished the season with its new additions. And remember, there's not going to be new additions unless they make trades. They're not adding a whole bunch of stuff. We heard from Cody Westerlund kind of asking about the way the roster looks now. This is kind of what the roster is going to be unless they make trades. They've got to make trades.
Because they have painted themselves into this corner where they have said, and you heard Mark Eversley talk about how they want to develop somebody. So that eliminates free agency, right? You can take the $50 million, $75 million Supermax contracts. Not that anybody would earn a Supermax on the Bulls. That's not something currently. But even a Zach LaVine type situation. Think about the amount of years it takes as a player to earn a max contract in the league. How long that took Zach LaVine. And then on top of that, think about how many years it takes to earn a Supermax and the accolades that are involved. So that's the development side of this. So you're really talking about a long-term view here, are you not?
I think they're talking about a 3 to 5 years, maybe 6 years, because, again, Mark Eversley said, I don't know how long it's going to take to develop that guy. As we talk about the Bulls drafting Noah Essengay in the first round of the NBA draft last night and what they're looking to do going forward heading into next season. Layla, we're talking about our expectations. We're reading the texters talking about their expectations of competing for a playoff spot possibly. What about what Mark Eversley had to say on the expectation for this team now that they are where they are?
So with respect to, you know, expectations for us, it's to continue to build on what we've built. So as I mentioned earlier, we're a team in transition. And, you know, we're all about bringing in young, dynamic, athletic players who can play the style of play that we want to play. You know, and I think at the end of the day, if we continue to do that, you know, we're going to build a team that's going to compete on a yearly, nightly, and yearly basis.
That is Mark Eversley that you're listening to here on Rahimi and Harris as we go through what the GM had to say, because the president of basketball operations, Arturis Karnišovas, he did not step to the mic after the first round of yesterday's draft. He did not join Mully and Hall this morning on the morning show here on 670 Score. But you got Layla and I talking about how things have gone down.
I just think that when you hear him say that, and then you hear what he said in our last segment about how they want to develop talent, but you don't want to fully tank to get it. You've painted yourself into such a tiny corner. This is such a small space that you have in the parameters to work when the NBA has shown you that that's neither way. You have to pick a lane. Like, neither one of these is a proven where you can just be in the middle of them all and make it work. Like, you have to do one of these things in order to get better.
One thing I do want to do is define tanking as I see it, what that actually means. So when I talk about the Bulls not tanking, what I'm saying is going, trading all the players that have value that you can get stuff for, and then running out your younger guys, Modis Bouzelis, Julian Phillips, I guess Dalen Terry as it is right now, and getting other supplemental parts. Jalen Smith could be a supplemental part because you're not going to trade him and get something of value for him right now. But guys, you can't just trade in the offseason right and get draft assets for back. You let those guys run, develop. They'll struggle a lot, but they will grow. And now teams get better, such as the Oklahoma City Thunder, which won, what, 28 games a couple of years ago, like 3 years ago? So that's how you do it. You get more draft capital, and you let your young players run and run and run some more.
I feel like they've put themselves into such a tiny spot to be able to succeed. Like, keep in mind, Javon Carter just picked up his option.
Player option. Yep.
So that's $6.8 million off the books. You're looking at probably giving $30 million a year to Josh Giddey because you've put yourself into the position where he's your player of need. So that's your free agent money. Vooch is still here. You get your mid-level exception if you remain in a certain spot salary-wise with your team payroll. So that gives you one more guy. But then that, as we talked about, and as Casey Johnson mentioned earlier today on The Score, you're then probably trading your draft pick. So that thereby limits, again, what you can do, your potential with this team. Dalen Terry, we're still talking about Dalen Terry in a way that I think is not fair to the team and to him, because I don't know that he is going to be a player they can develop like they did Kobe, Io, and the like. Like, I feel the same way. You're talking about Dalen Terry and Patrick Williams and Javon Carter still being on this team. You've got to develop your stars, and you can't have, say, the higher chances of getting 1 through 5 picks. It's confusing as hell to me.
I'm not even confused. I understand what they're doing. I just disagree with it vehemently. That's where I am. I'm not confused. You have stated what your goal is. You have stated what you're not willing to do. I understand it. Great text here, 847, blah, 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 mediocre, mediocre, mediocre. Yeah, we're in the speedyocre lane, as I like to call it. You know, not too hot, not too cold. This is some porridge stuff from Goldilocks we're talking about. And you know what the thing is about porridge? Whether it's hot or cold, it's still porridge. It's nasty.
Yeah, it is nasty.
Porridge is nasty. That's a great point.
Porridge is disgusting. Like gruel to me. That's how I feel about it. This is Raheem and Harris on 670 The Score. We talk about the Bulls draft. I as I try to process all of it, I also think about the roster construction. You know, we've talked a lot about how the Bulls want two-way players, but they don't have many. And so Caruso was one of them. I know he was more defensive specialist, but when you consider the offense that he had on this team, relatively speaking, he was one of their two-way guys.
The offense that he had in the finals helped keep that series where it needed to be. They were in danger of going down 3-1.
Yeah, Indiana forced Caruso to take more shots, and he did, and he made enough to make it happen. So Caruso's gone because you traded him for Giddey.
No draft pick.
Talked about shopping Lonzo Ball extensively. You signed him to a contract. A lot of people think to be able to trade him, which I still can't entirely wrap my head around. So he's one of your two-way guys, so he's being shopped. We don't know the status of Ayodele after the injury, but he's one of your two-way guys. And then you get a guy who you think is a two-way player, but money-wise, your devotion is still to a one-way guy in Giddey most likely, and a very one-way player in Vooch. And help me make it make sense.
Well, Vooch is on the way out. Whether it's now, whether it's trade deadline, in season.
Max, you're looking at a year.
But all they've told us is 2026. Here's what I want people to understand, because I think they understand our view very clearly now. But Mark Eversley, he's confusing sometimes in what he says. A great example from last night. Here's what he said that he has learned from watching the Indiana players as they kind of spread the ball around.
I think the thing I take away from Indiana is just their style of play. They continue to come at you over and over and over. They play fast, in spite of what the score is, what quarter it is. And I think that's kind of how we played a little bit this year. They've got a bunch of players who can play on both sides of the floor, and that's exactly what we want to build here in Chicago, is players who are versatile, both offensively and defensively. You can't hunt any of their players. Everybody can guard. Everybody can defend. Everybody can run. Everybody can make a shot.
Do you remember when the Miami Heat effectively hunted in their play-in game against the Bulls and blew them out? Josh Giddey is not a two-way player, but you're talking about paying him a lot of money. He is a one-way player. Great offensively. No one is denying that. He can drive an offense. That's why he has value.
Right.
But the team that just won the title... realized he was not going to be able to drive their offense where they needed because he would be hunted on defense. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander takes an even bigger role, steps into his MVP mode, and now you're left with a guy in Josh Giddey who, by the way, had spurts of defensive improvement last year. I'm not discounting that. But ultimately, he is a one-way player. And you just said you need all two-way players, a guy who cannot be hunted.
All of these things contradict themselves in a way to me.
That's the only way to look at it. And so, again, if they give Josh Giddey the money, I pose the question, it'll be my eternal question, once he signs that contract, which we presume he's going to sign with the Chicago Bulls, once he signs, whether it's a $150 million contract over 5 years, whatever it ends up being, Josh Giddey is the blank best player on a championship contender. You got to tell me that so I can understand where the other money goes.
Well, he was on a championship contender last year in Oklahoma City, and well, season before last now, as we look at it, but he didn't even get playoff minutes that were sufficient.
He fell out of the playoff rotation.
And that's what concerns me here. So you don't want to lose in a way that puts you in the highest likelihood of getting a 1-5 pick. Yeah, I know it came down to a coin flip when it was you and Dallas for pick number one. But at the end of the day, it didn't happen. And that's the exception, not the rule. That's not giving yourself the best chance. So we know that that's not something that they want to do. Draft picks are not as of much value to them as they are to other teams like Oklahoma City. So you've eliminated that possibility. You want to develop people, and we know your head coach does that very well, but we know that that takes many years. And you just let go a guy who was known for his development skills, and you're promoting from within.
Let's just see where the trades land. If there are trades in this offseason, maybe we revisit this discussion and have a much more positive attitude.
Give me something to believe in.
Yeah, right now, I believe that you have time. That's all I believe in, is that you have as much time as you need to do whatever it is you're going to do.
Okay, see, showed you in 4 years where they were. 4 years.
Four years ago.
You know what happened 4 years ago? 4 years ago, the Bulls decided to trade for Vooch, and they got DeMar DeRozan. And we had a fun first half of the season.
And then it all fell apart once Alonzo got hurt.
So we wait.
With the 12th pick in the 2025 NBA draft, the Chicago Bulls select Noah Essengay from Saint-Jean-du-Bray, France, and the Ulm Club in Germany.
I think I'm someone who just, you know, bring everything on the court. Energy, defensively, offensively. I'm going to get everything I got for the team.
Mullion Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670. The score, there's the pick last night. And you heard from the kid there right after. And we are delighted to welcome in Mark Eversley. He joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire. Aturo.com. Good morning, Mark. How you doing?
Doing well. Good morning, guys. How you guys doing?
Great to catch up with you. And really fun stuff. We've been having a lot of fun. Do you buy this connection, this idea that the draft, for the second year running, let's put it that way, you kind of got a player who fell to you that you didn't anticipate might be there? Is this similar to what happened last year with Matas?
I mean, there's a couple similarities. Definitely, we had Matas higher on our board last year. Our board this year, we had Noah a little bit lower than what Matas was last year. But, you know, it was a nice surprise when he was sitting there when we were ready to select at 12. And we had a couple options, and we decided to go with Noah. And, you know, we're thrilled and pleased with the pick.
How are you evaluating what is the ideal timetable for his development? It's clear, or at least it seems from the outside, that the Bulls are taking the long view here, playing the long game, whether it's in drafting Matas last year and now somebody who it feels very similar to a year ago. The morning after the draft, we're saying similar things about Matas Bezelis, and he had a heck of a rookie year. When you look at when you look at Noah Essengay, is he somebody that projects immediately into the rotation, or what is the development plan in your mind?
You know, I'm not a coach. Our job is to select players and hand them over to the coaches. I think for us, you know, we're going to work in collaboration with our coaches and put together, you know, a player development plan for him both on and off the court. You know, I don't think it's fair for me to put any kind of timelines on or expectations on the kid this quickly. I think when you look at what Modest did last year, I think if you go back and look at the first, you know, 41 games, Modest was, he kind of got time here and there, a little bit of sprinkle time here and there. And, you know, it wasn't until after the All-Star break to where he really, you know, found his groove and found, you know, he was able to adapt to the speed of the game, the quickness of the game, the physicality of the game. You know, our hope is that Noah has a similar path, but if he doesn't, you know, that's going to be okay. I think he's the person who will determine when and if he earns minutes, and it's really on him. We're going to create an environment here in this building to where, you know, he'll be able to come in here every single day, work on his body, work on his game, and, you know, he'll determine, you know, if and when he plays and how much he plays.
I'm curious, Mark, when you were scouting this kid, when you were going over everything, how would you compare the basketball Bundesliga to the various other maybe college conferences? Is it a higher level than that? Is it a higher, is it a lower level than the G League? Like, where, I'm just trying to determine where that league fits in sort of the understanding of international leagues.
You know, I think a fair comparison is something similar to the G League, and I use that comparison because it's mostly men. You know, they're no longer college kids.
Right.
You know, and that's what really attracted us to Noah was, here's an 18-year-old playing against men every single night, practicing against men every single night, and he had a ton of success, and that was extremely attractive to us. No different than when, you know, you look back a year, you know, Modest spending, you know, his time with G League Ignite. He was playing against men every single night. So there's similarities. Obviously, you know, I don't know exactly, you can't compare them exactly, but there's a lot of similarities in that, you know, they're both playing against men every single night.
Mark, you look around the Eastern Conference, obviously you look at what happened with Jason Tatum in Boston and what that did to the Celtics next year. The Pacers are dealing with Tyrese Halliburton with Achilles missing next season, and they are going to be a different team. Milwaukee with Dame Lillard, same kind of situation. The Eastern Conference would seem to be up for grabs. Did that play a role, or what role did that play in your thought process and decision-making and who to draft rather than somebody who might be a season or two away from contributing versus somebody who might be ready to contribute right away? Did that come up much at all?
I think the approach we're going to take is, you know, similar to how you, you know, introduced it, was we're going to take a little longer approach. I think we're going to be a little more pragmatic in terms of our decision-making. You know, the East is what it is. And, you know, you look at a team like Detroit who, you know, the year prior, you know, they made a big jump last year. Indiana made a huge jump this year and making it to the finals. We observe all those things, but we don't let it dictate how we're going to operate. We've got a plan in place. We want to stick to that plan. We don't want to skip steps. And, you know, it's not to say we won't be opportunistic. If there's something that makes a lot of sense that we can jump at and we feel, you know, it's a good move for the ball club, then we'll do it. But we're going to stick to our plan. We're going to be pragmatic. We're going to be really thoughtful on how we operate. And, you know, we'll keep an eye on the league and monitor things as they go.
I heard someone told us that he's played in the German professional league now for 2 years, which would indicate he started playing professionally as a 16-year-old. Has he been playing against grown men, as we talk about, since he was 16? And I know the kid's very tall, but that's still, like, extraordinary if that's the case.
And it's part of the attraction as to why we selected him last night. The first time I saw him play live for Ulm was last October. He was 17 years old.
Wow.
And Ulm played a preseason game against the Portland Trailblazers. Interesting story, and I'll try and be brief, but they flew from Istanbul two nights before, their plane got diverted to Seattle. They jumped on a bus and drove 3 hours from Seattle to Portland, got to the hotel, quickly changed, drove over to the Moda Center. We got to watch them practice for 2 hours. They went full out, went back to the hotel, slept, and played the next night, got on a plane that night, and flew back home to Germany. And for me, to watch those kids, especially Noah, in that environment for 48 hours, and the resiliency, toughness, just, it was super, super impressive.
Talking with Bull General Manager Mark Eversley here on the Mullion Haas Show on 670 The Score. So that brings up another aspect of this that is somewhat fascinating. He doesn't have much experience in American culture or in America at all. And that had to be something in terms of your conversation and looking into his background, how he might adapt and adjust. What did you find in looking into those things that made you feel comfortable that a teenager, the second youngest player in the draft, would be able to assimilate as quickly as you hope he will?
It's full credit to our scouting staff, you know, both in Europe and here in Chicago, is we made multiple phone calls. We talked to multiple people, coaches, trainers, anybody who was associated with the kid. And it got us to a place where we were comfortable selecting him. We got an opportunity to interview him via Zoom. You know, we got to see him practice in an environment, in his own environment. All of those data points gave us the confidence to know that if we put a plan in place for him and support him, that he'll get everything he needs to help him assimilate, one, as, you know, somebody off the court, and two, put together a player development plan here in this building, that he will flourish in time.
How many languages does this kid speak? It was incredible to hear how good his English was. And obviously he speaks French. I don't know if he speaks German, having lived in Germany for a couple of years. And, you know, there are certainly examples of European athletes, European citizens that speak multiple languages. I'm just curious, because it indicates he's pretty bright, listening to him speak English.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I would suspect that he knows a little bit of German. You know, our executive vice president, Arturis, is he's multilingual, yeah. You know, of course, playing over there. So, you know, it just speaks to the kid, right? And his English is pretty good. His French, obviously, that's his native tongue. And, you know, I would think that he knows a little bit of German, but I don't know that for sure.
Logistically, what happens now? Will he go back and finish? I believe his German team is in the league finals. Will he be part of that? When will he report to Chicago to play as part of the summer league team? And do you worry about his transition as he kind of is it between two continents?
So fortunately, he's in New York. We have somebody from the team on the ground who will meet with him today. Plan is for him to travel to Chicago this weekend, and the plan is for him not to go back to Germany. He'll be with us through summer league. We'll get him in front of our trainers and in front of our coaches here this weekend and do a full assessment, and, you know, we'll make a determination if we feel he's going to be ready to play in summer league. Hopefully he will be. Post summer league, you know, he'll probably go back home to Germany, and then we'll look to bring him back over here, you know, sometime in August.
Mark, we have heard, at least heading into the draft, all of these rumors about multi-trades and how the whole thing was kind of up for grabs. There were some trades, but it was nothing to the extent that we imagined. I know you guys had the opportunity, if you chose to go up or to go down or to do whatever you wanted. Was there a lot of trade talk? Were you involved in a lot of these things? You have a lot of guys under contract. I'm just wondering if, with free agency coming up next, if you believe there will be trades or not trades.
With respect to the draft, we looked at several scenarios, like you mentioned, moving up, moving back, you know, and nothing materialized. Of course, we picked that 12, and we were quite happy. You know, leading into the draft, we've had a lot of conversations with a lot of teams about a lot of different iterations. Nothing has popped to date. I'm sure we will continue those conversations, you know, as early as today with the second round being tonight. And then as we head towards free agency, we'll kind of level set and see where we're at and make a determination on whether we're going to sign somebody or not come July 1.
I know last night you made it a priority to publicly express the confidence the organization has in Billy Donovan. And obviously you don't discuss contract details, but the commitment is pretty apparent because of what he means to this organization, how he evaluates talent and develops players. What role did Billy play in assessing your potential draft picks? And what role did he play in the final choice that you made?
The great thing about Billy is he's here every single day. He's usually the first person in the building. As we kind of prepared for the draft leading up to the draft, he's been part of our meetings on a daily basis. He was in the room last night along with Jerry and Michael. This is a collaborative effort. And, you know, I think Billy trusts in us that, you know, we made the right selection and we're going to bring players in here who can help us win games. He's been an incredible leader for us. He kind of sets the tone here in this building every single day. He's been a pleasure to work with.
You know, I understand that the Knicks reportedly contacted you guys about him. I'm just wondering how that worked. Who did they call? How quick was the conversation? Was that ever anything you entertained? And obviously, we personally think very highly of Billy. Think he did a great job. I think your comment earlier about Matas and the way that he kind of helped develop him last year is an important thing to remember when you're drafting a guy like Noah this year. What can you tell us about that whole turn of events?
So the Knicks did call and request permission. We denied them permission, and it just speaks to, you know, the leader that Billy is and how much confidence we have in him. You know, he's the head coach of this team, and we love having him in the building. I wasn't part of that process, so I can't really speak much on it.
So last night, Mark, you talked about the Bulls being a team in transition, and whether it's that phrase or Arturs Karnišovas talking about shrinking the timeline, I think it reflects, you know, the plan, and it may be a plan that requires more patience from the fan base than maybe it's not as hard for you to be that patient as it is for some fans who are growing, you know, restless a little bit with the way things have gone in recent years. What can you say to those people who are looking at this and seeing another player drafted who will take maybe a season or two to develop? And he joins a group that has some developmental, you know, yeah, it's going to require the patience that you talked about, and how long before you start to see some results?
You know, I would look at how we end the season this past year, 15-5 down the stretch. Obviously, you know, a bitter loss in the play-in game. But the players who played in that game, Giddey, White, Herder, Modest, Vooch, you know, those guys all logged big minutes. They're all coming back. They're all going to be with us. That's the plan. You know, now we layer in guys like Patrick Williams, Jalen Smith. You know, Io DeSumo is coming back from injury. Zach Collins was a nice addition at the trade deadline. The beauty is we don't have to rely on Noah the same way. We don't have to rely on these young guys in the immediate future. They're going to be given a pathway to develop and contribute when they earn those minutes. So for the fans, I say, you know, the way we ended the season last year, playing a bunch of young guys, you know, developing a style of play that's exciting, you know, that's what I point to. Yes, there's going to be, you know, there's likely to be, you know, tough games and tough nights, but there's also going to be fun nights, you know, similar to, you know, Giddey's half-court heave against the Lakers. Those are the things I want fans to point to and just know that every single day these guys are in here, you know, working their tails off, trying to get better and grow as a team.
Mark, I'm curious about tonight. You were pretty forthright in talking about having the 45th pick, the second round pick. We know all the contracts that the team has. Just curious if you're going to do one of those kind of draft and stash routines. I just love that concept. I love saying that. It just sounds so like international intrigue. But have you made a decision? Will it come down to how things fall?
I think it's going to come down to how things fall. We're going to continue to look at all options with respect to that pick. And again, I talked about it last night, whether that's a draft and stash. We may look at a move up or move back option. And of course, there's always a move out completely option. So right. We'll look at everything and we'll make a decision that's going to best meet the needs of the team.
Mark, you mentioned Josh Giddey and that 47-foot shot against the Lakers. And he did much more than that in the second half of the season. He really came around and you saw what his value is. Now you get to determine what his value is. What is the next step with Josh Giddey in terms of his status contractually?
So when the right time comes up, we'll reach out to his representatives and, you know, we'll start to talk about what the future looks like with Josh. And like you said, his second half of the season was terrific. It's a small peek into a window of, you know, why we traded for him. After the deadline, you know, there was more opportunity and he did a great job seizing the moment. And, you know, he's been terrific for us, especially the second half of the season. We hope he's with us long term. And when the opportunity presents itself, we'll reach out to his representation and begin those discussions.
It's kind of a fun time, I suppose, whenever you talk about draft, whenever you talk about player development. I know you told KC yesterday, or at least I saw it, he was the one who tweeted it, that you're going to have Matas practice with the Summer League team. I don't know if that means he'll play in the Summer League, but he'll be there and be able to practice with guys, which is, I think, a really solid idea. And you just told us that Noah will be there as well. It's kind of fun when you get to a point where you start picturing a couple of guys playing together. And I think we have a pretty good feel for the guys that are on your team, and you've mentioned them. That's going to be fun just seeing what Billy can do and how that all works out with style of play, et cetera. I'm sure that came into play when you made this decision.
It is going to be fun. And, you know, Modest will go to Summer League training camp is what we call it. It'll be right here at the Advocate Center. And then we'll determine how many games he plays in Summer League. I think what the summer provides is an opportunity for players to get better. Most of those opportunities are in drills. What Summer League provides is an opportunity for our players to play in a controlled environment, which is appealing to us. You know, Modest's last game was our last game of the season when he played 5-on-5. And to be able to go to Vegas and play 5-on-5, again, in a controlled environment with real referees, you know, we hope it's an opportunity that he takes. And, you know, we'll sit down and discuss with him what that could look like. And again, it's going to be fun because, you know, to see those two guys out there on the court come July, it'll give us a small little peek into a window of what the future may look like.
Quickly, before I let you go, you mentioned having a Zoom interview with Essanguay in terms of the pre-draft process. When did you first meet him in person? What was your first impression when you did?
So I personally have not met him in person. We'll meet him this weekend. When we do go scout kids, you know, there's so many rules that prohibit us from having interactions with him. But again, the Zoom interview was great. He came across as, you know, bright, articulate, funny, super engaging, and we just got a really great feel from him.
Great stuff. Thanks so much. We really appreciate your time, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
Hey, guys, have a great day.
Thank you.
That is Mark Eversley, the general manager of the Chicago Bulls.
This hour is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today.
The question I've asked for the last couple of years, you guys keep talking about, you know, building depth, but at the end of the day, you still need that dude. Where are you guys going to find that dude? How do you, it just seems like you guys don't have a plan to land that kind of guy.
I think there's different paths, Joe.
That was our guest as we go to the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today. He is the man, the myth, the blowtorch. Joe Cali, the Sun-Times beat reporter, host of the Bulls Recap Podcast at JCaliHoops on Twitter, asking questions of the Bulls front office last night. And he now joins us on Rahimi and Harris on The Score. Hey, Joe.
I still didn't get a good answer.
That's how I feel about this. Is I feel like they've contradicted themselves, or at least put themselves into a very small space to try to succeed in today's NBA, or at least what I know about it.
Well, I mean, I think the disappointing thing is, you know, Noah Essengay could be a great player in 3 years, 4 years, 5 years. Who knows? I mean, he's so young. He is what he is. He's a project. The problem is, the frustrating thing for me is just the lack of urgency, especially in an off season where urgency is needed in the Eastern Conference, because it's kind of right there for the taking. And you see what Orlando's doing. You see what Detroit's done the last couple of years to set themselves up in a good position. I mean, no Haliburton, no Jason Tatum, no Dame Lillard. It's just kind of screaming, hey, who wants to step up and become, you know, king of this yard? And for them not to understand the urgency, forget about not understanding the importance of this draft, which we all saw play out throughout this season. It's just kind of, like I said, like I wrote, it's just a meh pick. It's just a, hey, you know, we're just going to kick back and stick to our tunnel vision, and we really, everything else around us, be damned.
They are a bureaucracy in that they take forever to pivot. And that's been part of the problem here during this acme, if you will, regime, Joe. I got a couple of questions for you, but I'll start with the most pressing one for me. How right. likely is it that they draft and stash this kid?
Essengay?
Yes.
Or tonight's pick?
No, Essengay. I'm talking about Essengay.
Oh, no, he's not a stash. No.
Okay, he's definitely going to play for the Bulls next season. Yeah. I just want to make sure.
100%. You'll see him in Vegas in a couple weeks.
Okay, that was my first thing. The second thing is, when he was explaining to you what he learned from Indiana, you and the assembled media, about how they needed a bunch of two-way players that could run, and they didn't, and you asked the question, and he talked about not players that could be hunted on defense, like, as you put, got hunted in that Miami game, the playing game. How is Josh Giddey not that player, or am I seeing something different than what everyone else is seeing?
No, he is that player. But, and, you know, I think, you know, no team is going to have guys that you're always going to be able to hunt someone down. I mean, the bottom line is you can hunt Haliburton down. The problem is he's got some defensive guys around him. You're always going to have guys you can hunt down. You want to limit that as much as possible. But they have almost every guy you can hunt down on that starting five. And that's the problem. And, you know, and I get what they're trying to do. And, again, more frustration because – they're looking at this model of Indiana, and they're saying, well, we were out in front of it, too, with building from depth, and that's what Indiana did. Yes and no. Can Essengay be Pascal Siakam? Who knows? I mean, that's years down the road. Can Bucellis be something special in the front court that Indiana doesn't have? Maybe. Who knows? But the one thing they can't say is, I mean, defensively, you could hunt a bunch of different current Bulls down. So for them to throw that Indiana comparison out, the only comparison is you both play with pace. After that, Indiana's got a dude. Whether you like Haliburton or not, he's a dude. And he showed that throughout the playoffs, putting on one of the all-time historic performances as far as big game shots. And so I think they feel like they're close because of the model of depth and high pace, but they're missing so many other key parts of this, and that's a go-to guy, that's physicality, that's the defensive part of this. So, you know, I knew the Indiana name and brand was going to come up in that press conference yesterday.
I mean, Joe, we were all thinking about the finals. I think even watching the tape that we saw of all these prospects during the draft, you know, that's what came to my mind. I'm thinking, oh, well, in the German league, yeah, you have space to work with in the lane because nobody's there. That's not happening. You're trying to see how all this fits. And that's not a diss necessarily on what Essengay does. It's just how you're seeing it come together. The other thing is the Pacers' talent. Like, that was suffocating defense. Absolutely just stifling defense, especially in the first half of even Game 7, you know, before Hallie goes down. Game 6, a wonderful example, where they can't run any other offense. So then you're having to rely on guys making those outside shots like Caruso. And I'm not in a position where I trust – say, even say if they get in that position, if they're in this position and we're trying to run our offensive set, and you've got the guy, you're forcing Patrick Williams, we see teams force Patrick Williams open on the outside. You're not confident in him making those shots necessarily. You're not confident in anybody having that kind of stifling defense on the Bulls. Like that's the part of this that I have so much trouble translating, is I feel like my mind got broken watching those finals where now I compare everything to that. And I'm trying to see how it fits in, and I can't do it.
No, and to your point, we saw what Indiana was doing, and that's against a very physical Oklahoma City team. So, I mean, you know, that even made it more impressive, especially that first half that you brought up. That this was a game seven against a team that is also very physical. And Indiana was doing things that were like, whoa, until Halliburton goes down. And, you know, and so the Patrick Williams element of this thing and the thing you brought up, as much as you want to rip on Patrick Williams, he's a much better shooter than Essanay is too. I mean, and they basically drafted a guy that they feel has to replace Patrick Williams, a guy they extended last year. And it's a mind-breaking exercise trying to understand, A, what their long-term plan is, and B, why they think it can work. I mean, I kind of see the plan. I think it's flawed. But then for them to think this will actually work, constructed as it is, that's why if they don't, and by all accounts, inside the organization and outside the organization, they have been aggressive the last month, especially with trade talk. But if they don't go in the next couple of weeks when free agency opens, which basically is going to be a bunch of sign-in trades anyway, because free agency is basically dead at this point with the aprons. It's all about sign-in trades. And so if they don't go into it doing what other teams have said they've been talking about and come out with, this is just our roster, and then the guy we picked tonight is either we either traded out and didn't pick anybody, or is a draft and stash, and this is it? My God, just hand in your resignation before fall camp.
Joe Cali joining us here on Raheemy and Harris, the Sun-Times Bulls reporter, the man who asked the tough questions in the press conferences. And there's many tough questions to be answered. Not sure that we've gotten satisfactory answers. Actually, I know we have not gotten satisfactory answers so far. So you talk about the trades, and I'm lining them up, right? The idea that Kobe White could be moved, the idea that Nikola Vucevic could be moved, the idea they could find some way to get out from under Patrick Williams' contract. How would you rank the priority of what maybe it should be for the Bulls and what the reality is for the Bulls for those moves?
Well, I think the first thing is the Golden State with Kuminga and Vooch and some kind of package. I think that's still very much alive. I think that will continue to be talked about. You know, both teams have to do something if they want to better their situation. The Kobe White or Lonzo Ball trade, I mean, that's kind of been ongoing. Lonzo Ball, they've turned down a couple Lonzo Ball trades going back to the night that they gave him the extension. They were turning down deals. So, you know, I think all of that stuff is in play. It's fluid. It's ongoing. And the problem I have with the Bulls is they don't seem to dictate the action as much as they react to the action. And so I think some other pieces will have to fall, and then there'll be that team that gets aggressive. But I definitely think everything is play. And the only way Patrick Williams is getting moved is obviously in a package with whether it's a Kobe White or it's an Io or if it's Alonzo. But they have to clear out that guard room. When you just look at the roster right now, you know, Essanay is part of it. You're going to resign Giddey. That's going to happen. However you want to do it, it's going to. So you're at 14, and then they're going to use that exception to the trade exception to bring in one other guy. So there's your 15 guaranteed contract.
Yep.
So that's why tonight is just a throwaway. I think they're going to completely try trading out of the second round. Because, you know, if you stash a guy, things just get a little too tricky. You have to feel really good that this guy's not coming over and he's worth it. So I have a feeling they're just going to try completely trading out. They have some – this can't be it. Just please tell me this can't be your damn plan.
That's how I feel, because I can't put it together. And I know I'm not – I've got some intelligence. I mean, I'm in journalism and radio, you know, so that's debatable. But son, right. This segment is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today.
Joe, so you just brought up a great point because you feel like maybe they're not forcing the action as they should. Let's go back to the draft last night. They make the pick, Essanga. Yeah. Immediately thereafter, you find out that the Pelicans' unprotected pick for next year gets moved in a deal.
Next year, too.
How confident are you that the Bulls even discussed, were involved, could have been them? Because if you can get the Pelicans' unprotected pick for next year, how can you not be all about that action in life to trade down 10 spots or so?
Yeah, I mean, I know they were in talks in looking to trade up. And I like when Malawash was falling, I was like, please, just see what your weakness is. Understand what this kid's about. Be aggressive and go get him. I don't know if that's what they were trying to do. I know they like him a lot, and they were surprised that Brooklyn passed on him at 8. And then, obviously, I know I don't even think he was, like, realistically in their draft area on the board of, like, because they just had a feeling this kid was climbing. I know there was some talk about Con Knipple. He was a pipe dream. I mean, again, you would have had to be super aggressive and giving up too much for him. So I know they were talking, and then Mark Eversley admitted to that, because I even asked him, was there any talk about moving up? And they said they were talking to 3 or 4 different teams. But, yeah, I mean, to your point, if that's there and it was just one pick after you, and again, we don't know the background. We don't know what New Orleans felt. They know about Queen, what they don't know about Queen, what the Bulls know about Queen, and that's where things get. Because, you know, you only see the film, you only see the skill set or what you deem the skill set and what you feel can translate. You don't know the background. And his background may have been really good for New Orleans, where they said, hey, we know what 26 is about, but we're throwing our chips in now on this kid. So, you know, again, until you could see the background reports and what teams really felt they know about somebody, it's hard to say how hard they want to go after them.
We're talking to Sun-Times beat writer for the Bulls, Joe Cowley, and the host of the Bulls Recap podcast on 670 The Score with Raheem and Harris. Joe, I know you were asking Mark Eversley a lot of questions about just how this team is being built. And you also were one of the first ones to point out the significance of when they parted ways with Peter Patton, the noted shooting coach and development coach for this team, who right. Kobe White, I would assume, and guys like that, really credit with their improvement. They said they wanted to improve from within last night. Given what we know about their coaching staff, and given that move with Patton, like, how do you see that taking shape?
Well, again, when they were first hired, you know, I go back and I like to read, like, early quotes when guys were first hired. And that one of the main things Arturis and Mark both stressed was, I mean, they found it insulting that Gar and Pax had such a nothing of a developmental staff. There was just no developmental staff. It was basically the head coach was there to develop them. So they really wanted to build out the developmental staff because they are here for the player. They have to cater to the player. And then yesterday to get that answer that, yeah, we're just going to promote some video guy and he'll be on the developmental staff. And we got some guys that have been on the developmental staff, but doesn't look like we're really going to replace the guy that at least 5 players I talked to in the firing swore by and said really changed their, not only the way fundamentally the way they shoot, but their idea of shooting and good shot, bad shot, when to shoot, when to be aggressive, all that kind of stuff, when to attack closeouts, all that kind of stuff. So that was a little disconcerting that you said you're here, A, for the player, but when it comes down to it, if a guy's not a yes man and you fire him, you really didn't go out and get let's get the next best guy out there in the NBA to do this job. So that was a little disappointing, and maybe that changes. Maybe someone comes free or something happens where they see over summer league guys aren't developing or aren't the coaching staff isn't vibing, so they go and add a guy. But, yeah, that one was a little of a head-scratcher, too. There were a lot of head-scratching yesterday, by the way.
Yeah, that's how I felt. I mean, I know when we say video guy, the first one who comes to my mind is, of course, Eric Spoelstra. But that's the exception, not the rule.
No, that doesn't happen often.
No, yeah, he's the rarity.
And, by the way, he was groomed by God, too, to become a coach. So that's a little different. When you got slick hair back Pat Riley grooming you to be the next apparent, I mean, that you're in good hands.
Joe, before we get you out of here, I got to ask, because now that the draft is 2 days, I was very much underwhelmed by action last night. I wanted some trade action, you know, if not the Bulls, somebody else, big things popping. Do you feel like that is what we are set for maybe tonight, since it is a 2 day process now?
No, I think there was already some big explosions. I think there's a lot more to come once that the free agency window opens up. And I think there's going to be some craziness. I think there's going to be a lot of stuff going on in the NBA this offseason because, unlike the Bulls, there are front offices, especially in the East, that understand it's time to strike. And if you have to get a little desperate to do so and be a little over-aggressive to do so, you go ahead and make that move, because they didn't get big contract extensions secretly. There's some asses that are on the line and jobs on the line, and they're going to go ahead and be aggressive.
And we got about a minute left, so I also want to ask you this, Joe. You brought it up last night. It was a surprise in a way when you considered also mentioning Coby White's name among the trade talks. Is that something that the Bulls have to do in order to move forward, is move Coby?
They don't have to do it, but I also think that they have to do their due diligence and take the idea of, do we want to spend? Because Coby, I can tell you this, Coby has told them he is not taking this hometown discount extension this offseason. So now they know he's betting on himself to walk to free agency next year. Do they want to go ahead and cut him off in the past and give him $40 million a year? Or do they want to call his bluff and see what the market gives him and let him walk for free? Or do they want to trade him now and get the most they can out of him? So either now or at the deadline. So that's why his name has been brought up, will continue to be brought up, and that's been reported on multiple fronts.
Got
to
move him. They got to move him. They got to get the – they don't have assets. They got to be in position. So when this young player, Matis Bouzelas, Asenge, whenever they're ready, they've got to be able to add to that mix, and that's how you do it, is by getting future assets.
And to your point, you don't want to spend $70 million on Giddey and Coby White and not one of them is an all-star.
Enough said.
The pause there.
No, enough said.
We just sat there and all looked at each other.
Joe,
except for Robbie,
on.
Who loves Giddey and thinks he's going to be an all-star. Joe Kelly, thanks so much for your help, for your perspective. Thanks for asking the questions you did last night. If you want more Joe Kelly, there's a good chance you do. You can find him on Twitter at Joe Kelly Hoops, also the Bulls Recap Podcast, and of course, the Chicago Sun-Times. Joe, thanks.
All right, you guys take care anytime.
Thanks, Joe.
That was Joe Kelly. We get back to more Cubs talk on The Score. It's Shota Imanaga Day. It's showtime. I had to do it.
You know who my favorite Cub is, so we already know what time it is.
We got to figure out also how he's being used in the game today against the Cardinals. Steamy game.
Would it be a good idea to check in with his pitching coach, maybe?
Yes, and not just that, but I mentioned that roster move. We'll actually tell you what it was next.